Welcome to the Quest Podcast, proudly presented by the Muscular Dystrophy Association as part of the Quest family of content. I'm your host, Mindy Henderson. Together, we are here to bring thoughtful conversation to the neuromuscular disease community and beyond about issues affecting those with neuromuscular disease and other disabilities and those who love them. We are here for you to educate and inform, to demystify, to inspire, and to entertain. We are here shining a light on all that makes you, you. Whether you are one of us, love someone who is, or are on another journey altogether, thanks for joining. Now let's get started. Today, I have two guests with me who are here from the MDA advocacy team to discuss the latest inaccessible air travel. First, I have Michael Lewis. Michael has spent over a decade working in disability rights for various organizations. His passion for disability policy advocacy stems from his experience as an individual with cerebral palsy. As Director of Disability Policy at MDA, Michael leads MDA's advocacy efforts on Capitol Hill and with federal agencies to defend and expand access to civil rights, education, economic independence and employment, and accessible recreation and travel for people with neuromuscular diseases and other disabilities. Joining us next is Mark Fisher, who is the Director of Advocacy Engagement at the Muscular Dystrophy Association. In his role, Mark leads MDA's grassroots program and advocacy volunteer efforts. He works to empower advocates and connect them with key decision makers in order to advance public policies that improve the lives of neuromuscular disease community. He previously served as the digital grassroots manager at the American Heart Association and was also a field organizer on a U.S. Senate campaign. Great. Mark and Michael, thank you so much for joining me today to talk about this topic that I know everyone in our community cares deeply about. Appreciate you being here.
Glad to be here.
Yes, thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Absolutely. So I did, of course, just read a bit of information about both of you, but would each of you like to just sort of share briefly about the role that you personally do with the MDA and sort of what that means?
So, I am Michael Lewis, Director of Disability Policy at MDA. And so I lead all the legislative and regulatory efforts on behalf of the MDA community pertaining to most recently and most importantly lately, accessible air travel. That's been a big push of ours this entire calendar year and before, but this year, especially because the Federal Aviation Act needs to be reauthorized by the end of September. But in addition to that, I also lead efforts related to disability, civil rights, voting, education, access to employment, financial security, SSI and SSDI, which I know a lot of our community members rely on for financial security. So that's a lot of what I do on a day-to-day basis and lobbying members of Congress and federal agencies on those issues.
That's amazing. Those are a lot of really hot topics. Thanks for that, Michael. Mark, what about you?
Yeah. So again, my name is Mark Fisher, Director of Advocacy Engagement here at MDA. And I run our grassroots advocacy program. So I work hand in hand with Michael and our other lobbyists to really push through key legislation, key agencies, And I do that through the power of the grassroots network. So I like to say that I am not a lobbyist, because I'm not, but I make our many volunteers across the country into their own lobbyists. And I help connect them to their decision makers or their lawmakers to make sure that they hear their voice when they're making key decisions about policy. So I connect them to their lawmakers. A good example is with air travel. We definitely have had many people write to members of Congress, come to DC to meet with their members of Congress, film videos of what this issue means to them. So my role at MDA is really to allow people to raise their voices and make sure that their members of Congress hear them loud and clear. And we do that through grassroots advocacy. So the ideal is, when Michael goes to Capitol Hill and talks to lawmakers, and then we follow up with the voice of the constituents, that's a really powerful 1-2 combination.
That's amazing. And I've worked closely with both of you personally. For anyone who is listening and may not be aware, I live with spinal muscular atrophy myself. And so this is a topic that's very important to me. And the work that Mark and Michael and their whole team does is incredible. And I worked with both of you on the recent Hill Day in Washington, which was a really great experience. So I'm going to dive in. There's so much to talk about, and there's actually been some very timely activity on this topic. So for anyone who is tuning in that may not be following this topic, maybe hasn't traveled as a wheelchair user or as someone with a disability or someone that they know who may travel under those circumstances, let's go ahead and just break down real quickly why it's so important that we change the current experience and barriers for safe air travel for people with disabilities. What are the current problems that exist?
Okay, well, I think how the baseline, the bottom line is that air travel is currently not very accessible, and some people would say not accessible at all for people that use wheelchairs or other mobility devices, or even new crutches or walkers or what have you. You know, there is just a lot of issues, everything from arriving at the airport and going through security, and waiting for the airport personnel to put you through security need be, and then getting to the gate and waiting for the airport or airline personnel to put you on the aisle there and get you to your seat on board the aircraft. There's also the issue of broken and damaged wheelchairs. 29 wheelchairs a day are broken or damaged by airlines. And the airlines are required to repair or replace them. But a lot of times that can take a very long time, weeks or months, dealing with time, you can be in a wheelchair that is not configured to your body or your needs or what have you. And that can be very dangerous for people with disabilities and especially people with neuromuscular diseases who can get pressure sores and whatnot from being in a chair that is not customized to the need. We also have issues on board the aircraft, the seat pitch, which is the amount of space between each row of seats. That seems to be getting smaller and smaller as the years go by, and that makes it very difficult to do the seat transfer from the passenger's own wheelchair to the aisle chair, and then from the IOCL to the seat on the aircraft, then increasing the risk of injury and being dragged over an armrest. Those are all very, very dangerous propositions that a lot of people just say, you know what, it's not worth the aggravation, it's not worth the risk, bodily harm or injury or getting my chair, which is basically my leg, broken and not usable while I wait for repairs. The Congress did pass a law in the mid-80s called the Air Carrier Access Act that was intended to make air travel accessible. And that act, which is known as the ACAA for short, what it did was direct the Department of Transportation to issue regulations that would ostensibly make air travel more accessible for people with disabilities. Unfortunately, the regulatory process is open to public comment. The airline industry, you know, gets a seat at the table. You know, they fought efforts over the last 37 years to make air travel more accessible. And so, because the ACAA only directs the Department of Transportation to issue regulations, which, by the way, can come and go with presidential administration. Regulations, the agency regulations, are not permanent. If you go through the rulemaking process, they can be saved.
You actually didn't know that.
Yes, indeed. And that is why FAA reauthorization represents such a tremendous opportunity for the disability community to get accessibility provisions included in the reauthorization legislation, because that means that there's accessibility provisions in statute, and they can only be modified by the Congress Act again. Not like an agency regulation where, you know, they can implement a regulation and then 10 years later or 3 years later, a new administration can come in and say, oh, well, you know, we've heard a lot of complaints from the airlines that the regulation is very burdensome and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
So we're going to kind of defang it and make it a little easier for the airline.
Right. And yeah, it's, well, I learned a lot just in, I thought that I was informed about air travel and accessibility in air travel. And I learned a number of things from everything that you just said. One thing that I think people don't necessarily always know is that the ADA doesn't actually apply to air travel. And I think that's a common misnomer. Would you agree?
Absolutely. So especially when we meet with congressional staff members, a lot of them do not know that when the ADA was passed or enacted 33 years ago in 1990, as a matter of fact, the 33rd anniversary was just two days ago. A lot of them do not know that air travel was one of the only industries that the ADA did not apply to. And the reason for that is that at the time the ADA was being written, The airline said, well, you just passed the interior access act 3 years ago. So you've already kind of taken care of us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't really need to be included in this new legislation. And, you know, since there was a lot of pushback when the ADA was being debated from a lot of industries, thinking that this was going to be an enormous cost to property managers and businesses and, you know, public transportation systems and taxis and, you know, the list goes on. And 33 years later, you know, nobody thinks about it. It's a cost of doing business. You know, if Target builds a new store, they're going to make sure that the parking lot has the required numbers of accessible parking spaces.
Yeah.
When, you know, the city or the state or the town builds a new street, they're going to make sure that there's a sidewalk that there's curb cut.
Mm-hmm.
When you renovate a building, especially a public building,
right. Obviously
not talking about a privately owned, but a publicly accessible building, they're going to put in elevators and ramps. And,
uh-huh.
You know, 33 years later, it's just built into the cost of doing business.
Yeah, it's all just kind of normalized at this point, and that's just, it's just how it is now. And I think that's, you know, sort of, we have to make this initial change with air travel, and, you know, there will be some expense that goes into it and some effort, but then it's just going to become the new normal.
Exactly.
Yeah. So there's a lot to unpack, I think, in the legislation that just passed the House. Was it this week or last week?
Almost 2 weeks ago.
Okay. So again, the FAA has to get reauthorized every 5 years or airplanes don't fly. And so, like you said, this was a really good opportunity to get some of the language written into law now that would improve accessibility. Can one of you, actually, Mark, let's turn to you. The language in the bill that was passed recently that's now waiting for Senate approval, what ended up being included and what didn't end up being included?
I'll definitely take a stab at that. But Michael, being the policy expert, he can fill in some of the gaps. So,
trying to share the love.
I appreciate that for sure. So a couple big things. One of the big things we hear is from people is, you know, when they interact with airline or airport personnel, whether it's assisting passengers, you know, from their wheelchair to the aisle chair, from the aisle chair to the seat or vice versa, the training isn't there.
Right.
And, you know, it's a luck of the draw if you get someone who knows how to properly transfer a passenger from an aisle chair to the airline chair or vice versa. You know, Mindy, I know you've experienced where you have arrived and the people who are supposed to be there were not.
Yeah, I recently had to be transferred by the pilots because there was no one else there that was supposed to be that, you know, is typically responsible for that particular thing.
Exactly. So the training piece is missing. And so the House bill would mandate that sort of training for both airline and airport personnel, which is important because depending on the airport, sometimes you are interacting with airlines, sometimes you're in with airport or mixed bag. So it would mandate training for that. It also would mandate training for folks who handle wheelchairs, because right now the training is just not either there or not sufficient.
Mm-hmm.
So it would mandate training for people to know how to handle wheelchairs as they load them into the cargo hold, where to place them, how to take them out. A lot of times that sort of knowledge is set on the shoulders of the passenger. So the passenger will have to tell the crew, this is how you handle my wheelchair, my power chair. That is now going to switch to the responsibility of the airline airport personnel. Well, they need to be trained on that. Because, you know, whether a lot of times, you know, if someone has a connecting flight, they can't even talk to the loading crew on that second flight because they're too busy going, you know, connecting. So better training overall.
And can I stop you there for a second? I apologize because I know that there's a bunch of things that are included that we want to get to. But so on the training piece, is that training going to be standardized? Or, you know, will there be certifications or a certain number of hours of training that people will need? Do we know yet what that's going to look like?
I might toss that back to Michael if he knows. I know there was written, there were some parameters in the law, and but a lot of times those things get, those gaps get filled in later by DOT. But Michael, I don't know if you have anything on that.
Yeah, the language actually directs the department, the Secretary of Transportation, excuse me, to issue a notice of public rulemaking requiring across-the-board training, both for airline personnel and third-party contractors that exist. Passengers with disabilities and seat transfers, or even just wheeling them through the airport, as well as baggage handlers who load and stow wheelchairs for flight. And the language specified that this training should happen every 6 months, and that airline personnel should have to demonstrate competency in order to be recertified, I guess.
Okay.
So, yeah, it is pretty robust. The language also encourages the Secretary of Transportation to include people with disabilities in the training. It doesn't require that, but it encourages the secretary to consider including, you know, people with disabilities in the training.
That would make sense.
Which I think would go a long way, you know, rather than just watching a 20-minute video, actually meeting with, you know, 3, 4, 5 passengers that rely on the wheelchair.
Right. Okay. Fair enough. So training is a great start. Michael, we're gonna kind of ping pong back and forth between you and Michael for the details and things. What's the next thing that was included in the bill recently?
Mark, do you want to talk about wheelchair paths and airlines?
Yeah, I would say, and then you can back me up on this, because I know the general, and then Michael can fill in the details. So we know that the holy grail is for allow people to stay on their wheelchairs and planes, like drive up and lock in. Like, that is everyone's ultimate goal.
Yes.
And this legislation furthers that goal. Previously, for this to happen, a lot of folks will say, why can't I just roll into a plane, lock in, and ready to go? And there's a few reasons why it's taken a bit of time. One is there had to be some studies to be done to prove that a restraint system could probably secure a wheelchair in case of a crash or crash testing, make sure that a wheelchair can get around the cabin easily, make sure that it doesn't break the floor of the cabin. I promise you that was one thing they tested.
I believe it.
Yeah. And how many seats would an average airline have to remove to allow a wheelchair to drive on the plane? So there's a lot of testing and studying that have to be done. Some of that has already been done previously. We still have a bit more to go. There needs to be a secondary study on crash testing for these restraint systems. And then there needs to be an economic study so airlines know what the demand will be. So there's a lot more to do, but this, for that to continue, Congress had to ensure that research continues. They had to make sure that the progress we made doesn't stop, because if not, then all that research would stop and we would be kind of doing nothing. So the House bill that was passed continues that momentum. And not only that, it sets up a concrete timeline that those studies have to be done. Those original studies have to be done. Before it was like, please get these done. Now it's no, these must be done by this time and this time and this time to keep the momentum going, because we need to keep it going to make sure folks eventually can wheel onto a plane. So this is the first time they've set a concrete timeline to get the necessary steps for this to happen, because this is the ultimate goal. Now, I'm sure Michael knows what that timeline is, but it's an important step, as Michael said, to get that in statute, that this has to, these things have to be done by that time, is a pretty significant development.
Yeah, and that was going to be my next question, because I think, you know, probably everyone who's listening, ultimately what we all want to know is, when am I going to be able to take my wheelchair on an airplane? And so, Michael, to Mark's point, do we know what that timeline actually is now? I love that there's some accountability finally in place, but what is that accountability actually?
So, feasibility and economic studies have to be done within the next 5 years.
Within the next 5 years?
Yeah, within the duration of the reauthorization. After the studies are done, the Secretary of Transportation has to convene a working group to go over the studies, make recommendations, and present a report of those recommendations to Congress. And I believe either a year or 2 years after that report is submitted to Congress, there has to be a notice of proposed rulemaking that would require a wheelchair spot on airplanes. One thing that we as MDA and me as a lobbyist on behalf of MDA have been lobbying for, especially as the Senate continues to prepare their version of the bill, is trying to make sure that the feasibility and economic studies run simultaneously. Instead of waiting for one study to be done and then taking however many months or years after that to do the other study, we want them to run concurrently to kind of work in the timeline, so to speak. And hopefully by the end of the 5 years, we can be at the point where they're doing the negotiated rulemaking instead of having to punt that to the next reauthorization.
Right.
Unfortunately, even when they do come out with a regulation requiring a wheelchair spot on airplanes, there is going to be a rather long implementation timeline.
Yeah.
Probably 5 to 10 years, I would guess, if I had to have it a guess. We could get a fantastic administration in 5 years. But to the point I was making, earlier this week, the DOT released their long-awaited final rule requiring acceptable laboratories on single-aisle aircraft. And that rulemaking process started at the tail end of the Obama administration. And then the intervening administration between Obama and now, they kind of mothballed that whole effort. And then, so when the current Biden administration came in, they picked the ball back up, so to speak, in early 2021, And the original negotiated rulemaking with the airlines and the disability communities, they invented again 7 years ago. The timeline was going to be that an accessible laboratory would be required on single-aisle aircraft that either ordered 18 years from the date of the final rule being published.
Ouch.
Or delivered 20 years for the date of the, from the date of the final rule being published. And so...
Okay, nobody else can see my face, but my jaw just hit the floor.
Understandably. And so, when the proposed rule came out late last spring of 2022, the disability community writ large had a lot of concern about that timeline. And so we submitted comments. We had many, many members of the neuromuscular disease community, the NDA community, submit comments on the proposed rule. And just back in May, Paul Mellmeyer, who was the Vice President of Public Policy and Advocacy here at NDA, we met with the Office of Management and Budget, and they are the agency that has the final review of all federal regulations that go out the door.
Mm-hmm.
And we met with them and said, you know, we really feel like because this whole rulemaking process started 7 years ago, you know, the airlines have known this was coming for 7 years.
Yeah.
And we feel like those intervening years did count toward that timeline.
Yeah.
And so we were very pleased when the rule came out on Tuesday to see that they had shortened the timeline from 18 to 20 years to 10 to 12. And that's a tremendous victory. And as a matter of fact, for new type certified aircraft, so let's say Boeing is in the process of getting a brand new Boeing 837 certified by the FAA. You know, obviously it's not on the market yet, but mm-hmm. they're building it. For any new aircraft like that, brand new model, everything, they are required to have an accessible laboratory within 1 year.
Oh, that's great. Okay, so let me ask you this. So you said the new timeline is 10 to 12 years, but that initial 7 years that it's already kind of been in progress, is that factored in? So it's really like 3 to 5 years from now, or is it still 10 to 12?
It's factored in and that it would shortened from the original
18
to 20 to the 10 to
12. Okay. Okay. I tried.
Kind of, but not really.
Okay, so this is great. So we've got actual legislation that's passed the House, going to any day, we're sure of it. Well, maybe not any day, but in the very near future, we anticipate that it will be passed by the Senate. We're going to talk more about that at the end, but we you know, everybody needs to do their part to raise their voices and make sure that that happens. We'll give you some more information at the end of the call, but we've got, you know, legislation now that puts a timeline to certain things to enforce some accountability and move us closer to wheelchair spots on planes. So if and when, mostly when, the FAA reauthorization passes the House, what can we expect to see change immediately, if anything, in terms of the experience that passengers with disabilities on aircraft have? I mean, will we even see improvements to how knowledgeable staff are that are handling us or our chairs? Or when can we expect to see anything change?
It's not going to be immediate. You know, a lot of these accessibility provisions require notice to public rulemaking by the Department of Transportation. And not to get too legalistic and wonky, but there is a process for federal regulatory rulemaking called the Administrative Procedure Act. So there is a very set process that, you know, they have to convene all the stakeholders, they have to do the research, they have to put out the proposed rule, and then they have to have 60 days of public comment, and then they go back and, based on the public comments, revise the rule, and then they put out a proposed final rule, and there's another public comment period before the final rule gets released. So it's not going to be overnight, but it's not going to be 10 years either. You know, a lot of these provisions have time frames of 12 to 24 months. Obviously not the wheelchair fast on airplane one.
Right.
It's going to take a little bit longer. But a lot of these rulemaking regarding training requirements and, you know, making sure the information boards and departure and arrival audio-visual systems are accessible, those have much shorter time frames.
Mm-hmm. I would just say, by the next time we do this in 5 years from now, all the things we talked about, the training piece, that those should be in place is what we're thinking. Yeah. So the idea is those will be in place. So next time FAA reauthorization comes around, either Congress doesn't have to deal with it because we already solved it this year, or they do tweaks to it. You know, another thing that people should hopefully see soon is the size of cargo hold doors is going to be more public than it is now. Mm-hmm. You know, for folks who need to know how big the door is so if their wheelchair can fit through it, it's very hard to find that information now. That should be more accessible by the next time we come around to this FAA reauthorization. And also with the accessible lavatories rule, that's a little different FAA reauthorization, but it's all lumped into the same thing. You know, for existing bathrooms, they should be made more accessible than they are now within 3 years. So more grab bars, just more accessible information. Now, for many folks, it doesn't matter. They're still too small to begin with. So it doesn't matter how many grab bars you put in there. They just, it's not workable. But for folks who maybe just need more assistance, that will be in there in 3 years. But, you know, Michael just does bring up so many things about the process. Like every step of the way, we have to make sure that folks are, and this will get to the last part, raising their voice at every step of the way, because I guarantee you every step of the way, whether there's possibility for feedback or possibility for comments, the airlines are going to come full blazing with reasons why they don't need to do it. I mean, they'll come full blaze like, oh, we can't do this because of X, we can't do this because of Y. And the reason we've made the progress we've made the last couple of years is because we've stood up to them and said, no, but you can do this. And like, the outpouring of, honestly, anger to what's going on has been so high that we've seen results. So that, you know, as much as we, as you can hear from this conversation, we've made great steps. We can't stop because we have to continue it because of the way the process is set up with how these regulations are done. There's a lot of opportunities for, you know, a wrench to be thrown in there. And you better believe that the airlines are going to try to throw wrenches in the system, and we have to make sure that doesn't, that's not successful.
Yeah. And no matter how you, I mean, as someone who is not a lobbyist, I am not, I don't work in the airline industry, but, you know, even I know how big a change this is and how costly, frankly, a change it will be for that industry. Those are poor reasons, I think, not to do something, because like we said before, you know, it's going to be a big change at first and then it normalizes. But
and every other industry's had to do it.
Exactly.
The airlines are the last ones to do it. Exactly. And, you know, I think most folks understand how awful air travel is.
Yeah.
Most people get on that plane and go, oh my goodness, I don't want to be here. It's so tight. It's so cramped.
Yep.
And then when you say, well, think about it, if you're a wheelchair user, how would you even do this? And they're like, I never thought that before.
Yeah.
So the more that that's shown, I think the public understands that, say, hey, come on, airlines, it's about time. Because so many folks in their lives will experience, you know, being in a wheelchair in their life. And they might not realize it now, but 10 years from now, you have no idea what could happen. You know, this is one of the only groups that anyone can be to use a wheelchair or crutches or who knows what any time of their life. And it's so just to say that, you know, something that once people learn about it, like, you know, the airlines might hem and haw about it. I just think the general public will, once you realize, oh, wait, this would be awful if I had a loved one in a wheelchair or myself or my elderly parents, like, you're like, oh, yeah, this needs to be done.
It's true. And I heard somebody, and I wish I could remember who said it. I'd love to be able to give them credit, but I saw something, I think, on LinkedIn the other day, and it was very simply stated, you know, typically if something doesn't exist for you, it doesn't exist. And so, you know, unfortunately, it takes a ton of awareness, just like you just said, Mark, you know, under the best of circumstances, air travel is tricky and uncomfortable and all of that. But if you lump a wheelchair or crutches or other mobility aids on top of that, you know, an injury, anything, it gets exponentially more complicated. And it's going to take all of us speaking up and standing up to this very powerful industry to require them to make change. And I'd love to ask kind of a follow-up question, because I think the other thing that we're going to have to see more of in order to kind of force their hand is for there to be more in the way of fines and things imposed when the airlines do, you know, injure a person, injure, you know, break a wheelchair, those sorts of things. Is that part of the language that was included in the FAA REOC this time around, is to put some rigor around those fines that the DOT imposes?
There was an amendment offered by Dina Titus and the markup. And Dina Titus is a representative from Nevada. The amendment requires when the Department of Transportation get a complaint of an ACAA violation, to within 120 days notify in writing both the person that lodged the complaint and the airline as to what the outcome of the investigation was, whether or not a violation occurred, and whether or not fines were being imposed, so any sort of enforcement action. It also requires the Secretary of Transportation to submit a report to Congress each year on how many complaints they received regarding ACAA violation, you know, and what the outcome of the complaint were, whether they were found to be reactive with the violation, whether they imposed penalties on the airline. We believe that imposing penalties will change behavior.
Yes.
On the part of the airline, they will be more careful they will be more careful when they exist in different food.
Absolutely.
Bear in mind that the Department of Transportation, you know, have the power to impose financial penalties for many, many years. They just haven't utilized it. And so we're kind of hoping to put, you know, we got language in the House bill, now the big hurdle is the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
Making sure that their provision get into whatever final version is passed.
Right. So I think, thank you for that, Michael. And I think that, again, this is another area where it's really important. You know, it's already such a hassle for this community to travel this way anyway. And then if there's an incident, to file the appropriate paperwork, to go to the DOT website, yeah, all of that. It's an imposition. It absolutely is. But I would say that it's even more important than ever that you go to the trouble and report any incidents that you experience, because, you know, it's a numbers game. And you know, the more volume of reports the DOT is seeing, the quicker I think that we'll see change, because it compounds. You know, the more people speak up and say, no, this happened and this happened, I think that's when we'll start to see even more results of the, you know, sort of the financial flavor that Michael was talking about. I am so sad. We are almost out of time, and I want to ask just one or two more quick questions. The Delta seating solution has been in the news a lot lately. And I know it's not the Delta seating solution per se, but it's Delta and another company that worked together. And they recently announced a possible seating solution that would make room for wheelchair spaces on aircraft. And it got a lot of attention and it generated a lot of excitement, understandably so, myself included. And so I think a lot of people are wondering if this is a seating solution that's going to have an actual impact on the timeline or speed along the process to get wheelchairs on planes. And I know that we've talked about how much work there is still to mm-hmm. do, but what about this recent announcement and that seating solution in terms of impact on change or the timeline?
So I'll go first. First, I would say, you know, there's a lot of, you know, angst against the airlines. And I mm-hmm. get that. Totally get that. And I would say, though, this is the first time we have seen, it's a division of Delta, but the first time, I think, Michael, you can correct me, that we've seen an airline come out forward and say, hey, this is what we're working on.
Yeah, that it is so encouraging.
That's pretty remarkable. And I, you know, a lot of time, you know, we always say like airlines won't do it until they're forced. They won't do it until they're forced. I still believe that. But I still think this was the first time we have seen airlines say, hey, we're putting a solution forward. So let's give that credit, because
absolutely,
first time we've seen it. And hopefully, I don't really care what the motivation was for it, but I'm glad that they did it. So that's a really big positive, I think. And hopefully they continue the effort to refine it. Hopefully may other airlines either jump on board with their own or join. I don't know how that all works, but that's the first time that we've seen an airline do that proactively. And I think we have to look at it as a positive and give credit where credit's due, because it's about time.
100%.
I will say, Michael, I'll ask you this, but that solution would still have to go through quite a bit of testing, though, to make sure that it is safe and make sure it works. So it's not... let's say Delta says we finished it, this is what we want to do. It still has to go through some testing and studying, right, Michael, before it would be on a Delta flight.
Yeah, it has to be cross-tested for airworthiness. It has to be type certificated by the FAA. There's a lot of stuff that need to happen, but the encouraging thing is that we're seeing the movement toward mm-hmm. that.
Yeah, I think that's right, Michael. It's like what I'm hoping for is they don't quit developing and maybe we see another airline say, this is our idea. I have to think the writing's on the wall. Mm-hmm. Because this couple years has just seen such a big groundswell momentum where people are just tired of it. Yeah. They're tired of the wheelchairs being broken. They are tired of all the things that go into being with flying. And it's the most groundswell I've seen in a very long time. And we also have to recognize that the population is aging. And yeah. if airlines want to continue to fly folks around the world with an aging population that they want to fly, they're going to have to do something because you can't just say they're going to cut off quite a bit of potential revenue, so I'm hopeful that I don't care what the motivation is in the end. I just think it was positive that it came from an airline for once.
Totally agree. And so I want to kind of wind us down just a little bit by saying, first of all, thank you to both of you for being here again and for sharing your knowledge. And honestly, as both a person living with neuromuscular disease and an employee of the Muscular Dystrophy Association, I am so proud to work for an organization that has a team of people who care about and actively come to work every day working on creating progress on things like air travel. And so I just want to ask this final, almost final question. So, with so many issues in the world that we could be working on, there's unfortunately, it's not a perfect world, and there's a lot that we could be working on fixing. Why has the MDA advocacy team chosen to make accessible air travel a priority?
A big part of that is because for a lot of people with neuromuscular diseases, they're living in the adult head, they're getting married, they're going to college, stuff that nobody thought was possible 20, 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Even still, there are still no cures. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of gene therapies, but still no cures. And so clinical trials are vitally important. And unfortunately, not everyone can just go to the local hospital and get the treatment they need because there's not a Duchenne specialist in every county hospital. There's not an SMA or a myasthenia specialist at every hospital. And so, to both find a diagnosis and get treatment and even participate in clinical trials that are trying to find new treatments and cures for neuromuscular diseases, a lot of times air travel is required.
Mm-hmm.
To get to study sites, the hospitals, or what have you. And so, because air travel is not accessible,
mm-hmm.
a lot of people with neuromuscular diseases will have that, hey, I'd love to participate in a clinical trial, but, can't get there. Or I could get there, but I might not have a wheelchair when I get there.
Yeah.
Or I could get there, but I might be injured when I get there. A lot of people decline to do them.
Yeah.
Or they forego medical treatment or, treatment that might be significantly better than what they can receive at the local hospital. So that is why we have made such a tremendous push for accessible air travel, because especially within the neuromuscular disease community, it's kind of the nexus of all the other issues. Then being able to get there for the diagnosis or the treatment or the study, it's all connected.
You know, I think from my perspectives too, why it's lucky that we all agree that it's the number one issue. It's the one issue that we, MDA, serves a lot of different people with a lot of different neuromuscular conditions, or ALS, or, you know, to so many different conditions under our umbrella. Air travel is probably one of the number one issues that connects them all. You know, we do work on issues that might be more specific to a certain condition over another, or a certain age group over another. Air travel touches everybody. And it's the one that gets our grassroots advocates the most riled up. It's the one that people have the most connection with. And it's been the number one this year just because FA is off every 5 years. This is the time to do it. This is the year that we need to put everything we have, because we might not have another chance for another 5 years to make any sort of gains. And then another reason is, this is another organization that a lot of our partner organizations work on. Now, we work with veterans groups, that this is very important to them, as you can imagine. This is important to groups who represent senior citizens. This is very important to groups for people with visual impairment. You can just, I mean, the more you think about it, the more you're like, oh, I didn't think about this group. I didn't think about this group. So many of us are affected by this issue that it's an easy one to rally the troops, so to speak. It's an easy one to bring in our other partners in for one voice. So, I mean, we could do a whole hour why this is the number one issue, but it's the one in my mind that anyone that we serve in MDA can relate to.
Very well said. Very well said. And to that point, Mark, I would love to give you the last word.
Oh, boy. That's exciting.
And just talk a little bit about how people can get involved and what people can do to make their voice heard and sort of join the ranks of people who are rallying so hard on this issue.
Yeah, I'd love to. So the easiest way is for folks to go to mda.org/airtravel. You can go to mda.org/airtravel, and you can simply enter your information in, and we pre-populate a letter you can send to your members of Congress urging them to make huge strides in this FA reauthorization. If you've never contacted your member before or don't even know who your member is, it's totally fine. Our system will match you to your lawmaker, so you don't have to worry about that. We'll give you a pre-populated letter that you can edit if you'd like, or just send it in as it is, and then you can make your voice heard that way. So the easiest way is mda.org/airtravel. And that's the best way to take action on this issue. And I want to say that, you know, living in 2023, there's understandably a lot of skepticism whether your voice matters or not. And I understand that. But I would say this issue is very bipartisan. When we have champions on both sides of the aisle, I like to say that people being upset about air travel is a bipartisan issue. And this one surely is. So we have champions on very surprising champions on both sides. So, and this is one that we've heard lawmakers listening to our advocates pointedly. This is one that they want to hear from us. They want to hear your voice. I know people say they don't listen to me. Trust me, they do. They do. This issue hits home for so many people. When they read a letter that says, hey, my mother can't travel because of how awful it is, that senator totally understands that. They can feel that. They can relate to it. So I encourage people to make their voices heard. Throw away the cynicism. Throw away the skepticism. Your voice matters in this issue, and it will continue to matter. As we talked about before, we are making significant progress, but there is a long way to go. And we can't stop at any step along the way. We got to keep the voices heard. We're up to this point now because we've had so many advocates and so many volunteers say enough is enough. We're not stopping. We have to make changes. We got to keep that momentum up. And I believe we will. I think we're at a point where we push the ball down the hill and it's going to keep going. I don't think people can stop us. I think we have the momentum on our side. So we got to make sure of that. So please go to mda.org/airtravel, and you can sign up with us, take action, and we'll keep you updated along every step of the way.
Then the legislation has passed the House. We're still waiting on the Senate to take action on the version. It is worth noting that Congress is getting ready to leave for the entire month of August. Traditionally, they have August recess, where they go home to the district and they meet with constituents and they kiss all the babies and they do all that kind of politics and stuff. So they're not in Washington marking up bills, they're taking votes, but they are, you know, having town hall meetings and that sort of thing. They will come back to D.C. after Labor Day, and at that point, Congress will have about 2.5 to 3 weeks to get this thing out the door. Of course, there's always the possibility that either the majority leader or the Speaker of the House could call everyone back to D.C. before Labor Day. Or even in the middle of August. But like Mark said, we will keep you guys updated every step of the way.
Perfect. And so well said by both of you. Let's make sure that when they get back to Washington after being in their local offices, let's make sure that they come back to a big giant stack of letters Absolutely. And phone messages from their constituents who all want to see air travel made more accessible. I think that this is truly an issue where it's taken the collective voices of all of us to get it to this point. And just as you said, Mark, we can't take our foot off the gas at this point because we're really close and the progress has been really, really exciting. So again, thank you both for being here. I really appreciate both of you and all of your hard work and appreciate all of you for listening in. If you've learned something from this podcast today, do us a favor and share with a friend, someone who you think may not know about the accessible air travel issue. And let's grow the circle.
Absolutely. And again, thank you for having us, Mindy.
Thank you for having me, Mindy.
Thanks so much. Thank you for listening. For more information about the guests you heard from today, go check them out at mda.org/podcast. And to learn more about the Muscular Dystrophy Association, the services we provide, how you can get involved, and to subscribe to Quest Magazine or to Quest Newsletter, please go to mda.org/quest. If you enjoyed this episode, we'd be grateful if you'd leave a review. Go ahead and hit that subscribe button so we can keep bringing you great content and maybe share it with a friend or two. Thanks, everyone. Until next time, go be the light we all need in this world.